The good. The bad. The ugly.
Welcome to Sustain Nutrition's podcast, Chewing the Fat, where Joe and James will be discussing all things good, bad and ugly regarding training and nutrition. So pull up your pants, put your best foot forward and get ready for some serious oral pleasure. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Joe and James.
Sustain Nutrition, Chewing the Fat, whatever episode it is, can't remember. We're joined today by the fabulous, strong, well-muscled Dr. Emily Wilkinson. not planned this intro. Business owner, doctor, athlete, nutritionist, superhero. And we're going to be talking about nutrition around the perimenopause, busting some myths, offering some expert advice. But Emily, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
That was some introduction. Thank you. Hi. So I'm Dr. Emily Wilkinson. I have a master's in human nutrition and I have a PhD in appetite psychology. So I actually own a gym with my husband, hence the muscle part, and I bodybuild. But alongside that, I also work with both personal training clients and private clients from a nutrition perspective, nutrition and health perspective. I take clients on who just want to focus on nutrition and training, but then also more from the psychological aspect, I take on what I would call food therapy clients. And we're looking more deep into factors that are affecting appetite and how we can use psychological tools to help manage that. I work with people who have disordered eating. I work with people with eating disorders who are, say, weight restored after going through periods of anorexia. And now they're looking to really change their behaviour. So it's what my main focus is behaviour change, lifestyle changes, and a really health approach to nutrition.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I won't. I want to put a dramatic pause. I don't want to cut you off. So we ran a survey a little while ago, and we collected a load of questions from our primary demographic, which is going to be perimenopausal women. So if you stumbled across this as a bodybuilding man, it's probably not going to be the episode for you. But we just want to work through those. The first question then is, why is it harder for women to lose weight during perimenopause and as women age?
So there's a bit of a myth that it's you can't lose weight as you age and as you go through perimenopause, which is just a myth. So the principle behind weight loss is exactly the same. You need to be in an energy deficit, so you need to be eating less than your body is expending. However, it does get harder. So when you go through perimenopause and into menopause, you're experiencing a lot of hormonal changes. So the amount of estrogen that your body produces is reduced. And this has a knock-on effect. So all of those symptoms that you might be experiencing, say things like hot flushes, lack of sleep, even anxiety, low mood, low motivation, all impact your appetite. And that can mean that losing weight becomes really difficult. At the same time, you do experience some metabolic changes. So your body essentially wants to hold on to fat because fat is a way for your body to make estrogen. So all of the cells in your body have estrogen receptors. So when you stop producing estrogen in your ovaries, your body's going to try and get it from somewhere else. And the best place for it to get it from is fat, which is why you might get fat on the abdomen. You might experience that is become more of a thing. That's why you're storing the fat. And it's actually protective. Your body's trying to protect itself against the side effects of menopause, of which can be quite severe. So it will hold on to fat for you. So again, it's you can lose the weight, you can lose that fat. However, it's going to be more difficult. You've got a lot of things going against you. So you've got to really tackle the lifestyle changes and have a bit of acceptance as well. So previously, you might have found that if you embarked on a weight loss journey, the weight came off quite quickly in a more linear fashion. Now it's going to take a bit more time and there's going to be ups and downs. And sometimes it's a mindset thing just to really try and get through that.
That's fascinating. I've never heard that before, that the body tries to hold the body fat to regulate the estrogen. That's a totally new one, I think. So what can people do to help with this then? What would be your kind of like your key three things for people to focus on?
Well, my first one's not going to be about nutrition. So feed works within really specific biochemical parameters, and it can be used as a way to really support people during menopause. However, it's not going to fix anything, and it can only go so far. So what you really need is medicine, so HRT. Now, so some women, HRT isn't necessarily an option. So if you've got breast cancer in the family, it can be a very difficult conversation to have with a doctor, whether you can find something that actually works or whether you just can't take it at all. But for those women that can take HRT, I would highly recommend it, because you are not producing the hormones that you produced before. So allow your body to get them synthetically. That is the most powerful thing you can do to manage symptoms of HRT. From a nutrition perspective, what can you do? So firstly, I'd look at things like your protein intake. So as you age and as you go through perimenopause and into menopause, your protein requirements actually increase. So it is important to look at your diet and see if you can increase your protein with that. Now, if you've been working with James and Joe for a long time, if you've been doing a lot of resistance training in the past, you might already have a high protein intake. So you don't necessarily need to change it. But if you're coming into this new, you might want to look at how you can increase that. And that will help things like your muscle mass. It will help with your appetite, because it's the most satiating nutrient. But it also helps with things like your bone mineral density as well. So it is really important from a health perspective. And what we do know is the more protein you eat, that's linked to the more lean body mass you have. And the more lean body mass you have, the better your health outcomes and longevity. And then I would look at things like your fiber intake. So again, it's more about managing appetite. So fiber is the lowest calorie macronutrient. So if you increase the volume of fiber, you're doing so without the detriment of necessarily increasing the calories in your food. So again, it's a satiating thing, but then also fiber is really beneficial from a weight management perspective, from a heart health perspective. It reduces your risk of things like diabetes. So it's really important nutrient to get on board with and to make sure that you're eating enough. So at least 30 grams of fiber per day. And then I'd also look at the types of fat that you're eating. So making sure that you're not eating too much saturated fat. So saturated fat is the bad stuff. It's the stuff that we need to limit to no more than 20 grams a day. And it's the stuff that increases your risk of things like heart disease. Your risk of heart disease increases anyway as you go through perimenopause. So you need to employ strategies to try and reduce that. And saturated fat is the hard stuff. So if it's hard at room temperature, it's likely to be a saturated fat. So it's the visible fat on meat, things like coconut oil is high in saturated fat, chocolate as well, which is the thing we all crave when we're feeling a bit rubbish.
And you've mentioned in there, you know, the first point that you made was that you're going to need medical intervention, or you're going to benefit the most from medical intervention. And one of the most common questions that we get asked is about nutritional interventions. So what are the nutritional interventions from a hormone perspective, and how do they kind of stack up against medical intervention?
Okay, so you can't, contrary to popular belief, you can't balance your hormones through nutrition. So purely a healthy diet is the best thing that you can do from a hormone perspective. When you are aging and you're going through menopause, your hormones are going, like there's unfortunately nothing we can do about it, which is why I'd always say HRT first. From a nutrition perspective, what you can do is give your body the best start and the best help as you go through that. So from a hormone perspective, making sure that you can produce what you can produce. So similar to not eating too much saturated fat, you want to make sure that you're eating enough unsaturated fat. So that's the good stuff. And that's the oils at room temperature. So olive oils, the fat that you get in oily fish, so salmon, mackerel, avocados, nuts and seeds. You can also look at things like phytoestrogens. So eating foods that are higher in phytoestrogens. So there's a little bit of research around this. It's very inconsistent. For some women, it seems to work. For some people, it doesn't. But you'll find phytoestrogens in plants. So they're basically plant estrogens. You'll get them mainly in soy products, in things like chickpeas, if you eat a lot of hummus. You have to eat quite a lot to see any benefit. So it's one of those things that I'd say, if you enjoy the foods that contain phytoestrogens and you want to eat a lot of them, and you can balance that from a calorie perspective so that you're not eating too much food, then certainly go and try it and see if that helps. But just generally following a health-first approach when it comes to nutrition. So really think Mediterranean-style diet. So lean sources of protein, loads of fiber, loads of fruits and vegetables. Not eating too much sugar. So again, there's a little bit of evidence to show that if you eat quite a lot of refined sugar, that can promote some of these symptoms of menopause. Usually that's when it is in combination with a calorie surplus, but even so, I'd say try to eat less refined sugar so you can keep yourself either at maintenance or in a deficit. And then the other thing just to tackle is alcohol. So firstly, alcohol has a lot of calories in it. So if you're trying to lose weight when you're going through the menopause, it's not the best thing to be having because the number of calories that they're seen as empty calories. So you're not really going to get much of the benefit other than having the drink. And also alcohol is an appetite stimulant, so it tends to make you want to eat more food. But alcohol does really affect your sleep. And if one of the symptoms of menopause is poor sleep, that's not going to help. When you sleep badly, then your appetite the next day is affected. So alcohol is quite a key one that I'd say either cut out completely, although I wouldn't necessarily recommend that if you just enjoy a drink now and again, but really look at how much you're having and can you really reduce that?
I think probably about 50% of our listeners have just switched off this
Yeah, I apologize. Keep
podcast
drinking. Go for it.
now. So nothing
Have a glass of
is
wine.
we said, one of the things if you're struggling with perimenopause is weight, poor sleep, energy, and anxiety. Throwing alcohol on that fire is probably not going to be the best one, is it? Now, I know you mentioned about avoiding saturated fats. Is there anything else that you'd say, like, must have, avoid this at all costs? I mean, you mentioned saturated fats and sugars and possibly alcohol. Is there anything else, any other dreams that you want to shatter for people?
No, I'm gonna shut. No, there's nothing else. Again, it's more focusing on the overall health of your diet. And there's so much information out there and there's so much misunderstanding, not just about menopause, but just generally about diet. And there's a lot of fear mongering. Think everything in moderation. So you need to take a health first approach to your diet, but you should do that throughout the life anyway. You've got to enjoy food. So I'm a big believer. I know I sound like I'm poo-pooing it. Don't drink, don't eat chocolate. But actually, like I'm a big believer in enjoying food because what's the point if you don't enjoy it? Like food is there to be enjoyed. But just look at how much you're having and just make sure that it's in line with your goals. So if you're perimenopausal and you're trying to lose weight, then drinking alcohol and eating chocolate is not a goal-focused approach. Does it mean you can't have it? No, but you really need to look at how much you're having. So, yeah, you don't need to, there's nothing you need to cut out. You just need to reduce if you're over consuming some of these foods. And you just need to make sure that the majority of your diet on the majority of days in the year is a really health focused approach.
So
You
on the
mentioned.
flip side, oh, sorry, just one more. Sorry. On the
I was
flip
going to say.
side, is there anything that you must have then? I know you talked about fiber and you talked about protein.
Yeah, so fiber, protein, big ones, and then unsaturated fats, so the good healthy oils. So in terms of fiber intake, yeah, 30 grams a day. That can be quite difficult to achieve for quite a lot of people, but really think about making sure that you're getting at least 5 a day. So at least 5 different sources of fruits and vegetables. And on top of that, if you can focus on things like whole grains. So if you're having cereals, make sure that the whole grain varieties, whole grain breads, the brown stuff, so brown pasta, brown rice. Oats are a really great source of fiber because they also contain a lot of beta glucans, and beta glucans are really important for your heart health. So estrogen is protective against cardiovascular disease. So when you start reducing that, your risk increases. So if you can have beta glucans, fiber, and also unsaturated fats, that then helps to reduce your risk. So yeah, they're the main things that I would focus on. So making sure you're getting your fruits and vegetables. Make sure the protein is majority lean source. So again, there's no problem having a steak now and again, but I'd cut off the visible fat. If you like a bacon sandwich, maybe switch to bacon medallions that already have the fat cut off them. If you like a sausage, just get a reduced fat version. But then chicken, white meats, white fishes, and then oily fish to get your omegas in.
Perfect. Thank you very much, sir. A real a thorough hit list of things to do. You mentioned about the obviously a lot of misconceptions around nutrition in general, but what are the misconceptions you see around hormonal health, perimenopausal fat loss, and those pieces, please?
So, yeah, well, the main one is that people think that they can balance their hormones through nutrition. And like I said, it's not really a thing. You don't get hormone balancing foods. You get foods that can help promote general health, which is then linked to more balanced hormones. So, I'd say, yeah, that's probably the most common myth. The other one is just generally about metabolism slowing. And again, it's not really... There is some impact on metabolism, but it's more the lifestyle changes that you subconsciously make in response to the symptoms that you get from perimenopause. So it's not that suddenly you can't lose fat, but it might be that because you are exhausted, you sit down more. And it is really subconscious. Unless you're actually tracking steps, or you're using like a watch or something to make sure that you are getting up and moving more, a lot of the time it's just when you would have gone to the shops, you might have decided just to not bother. Or when you would have used the stairs, you might have chosen to use a lift. And it's not really something that's really factoring in, but it's just a case that you are exhausted. And then similarly around food, it's that pickiness. So if your appetite is high because you are whether tired, stressed, anxious, whatever it is that's causing a high appetite, you subconsciously eat more food. So if the food is presented in front of you, you might think, oh, I've just eaten a few pieces of chocolate, but actually you've eaten 150 grams of chocolate. Or if you didn't weigh your peanut butter, you've gone from having what was a small spoon of peanut butter of 10 to 15 grams to now 20 to 25 grams. And on a day-to-day, if you look at a day-to-day, it doesn't really matter. But if you look at it over the courses of weeks and weeks and weeks, it all adds up. And that's where you see the weight creep up. So it's more being really conscious of those lifestyle things that you do and making sure that they stay within that remit of whatever your goal is. But at the same time, also be kind to yourself, because these symptoms, yes, we can take HRT and we can have nutrition and exercise strategies to help reduce them, but they might not go away. And different women are impacted in different ways. So some women have very mild symptoms and other women have like debilitating symptoms. So sometimes you might need to use something like food as a coping mechanism. And if you look in the grand scheme of things, the three main things that we use as coping mechanisms are food, fine, alcohol and drugs. So I'd rather you focus on food than alcohol and drugs. So it's okay to admit defeat sometimes and have that bar of chocolate. Don't beat yourself up about it. The next day, just move on and get back onto whatever plan you are following.
That's some great advice there, because the perfectionist that we see a lot in people kind of presented would do that, would beat themselves up for doing that thing. And there's always, like you said, there's levels to these. You know, this level of emotionally, everyone I speak to has emotionally, you know, some level.
You know, it's 100%.
It's totally understandable. Are there any supplements that you recommend? Because, like, you touched on people believing that they can balance out the hormones and hormone hacking, etc. Is there any, because you do see these kind of specific perimenopausal supplements, is there anything that you'd recommend or what people should look out for?
So the one that I'd recommend everyone take, and it's not specific to menopause, although it becomes highly important during perimenopause and into menopause, is vitamin D. So vitamin D is not actually a vitamin. It's a hormone. You don't get enough from food. So you do get some in things like oily fish and eggs, but you'd have to eat so much to get enough. And you need the active version. So you really need vitamin D3. So you get it from the sun. So when the sun hits the skin, UVB rays cause a chemical reaction, allows your body to make vitamin D. If you are all in the UK, then there is a good chance that you are staring at some clouds right now. And we don't get enough sun. So we would recommend you have at least 10 milligrams between October and April anyway. Arguably, I'd say you should take vitamin D supplements every day. There is some evidence to show that the more the better. So some of them, so it's about 1,000 IUs is like your standard amount if you're not looking at milligrams. And now you can get supplements that are sort of plus 4,000 IUs. So it's quite a high dose, but there is some evidence to show that that will benefit you. And you need it for two main reasons. So firstly, you need it for your immune system, which is why we say everybody should take it. But secondly, you need it for your bone health. So in order for your bones to lay down calcium, which is what gives your bones its mineral density, that needs to be in the presence of both vitamin D and estrogen. So if you're not taking HRT, we're kind of taking away the estrogen element anyway. So we really need to maximize on the vitamin D. So making sure that you take a vitamin D supplement, and everybody should be doing it. If you're watching this and you're not menopausal yet, then start now if you're not already taking something. And then it kind of depends on your diet and it depends on your nutrition status. So if you avoid certain foods, so say, for example, you are plant-based, you are either vegetarian or vegan, you probably need to take more supplements than somebody that isn't. But calcium is a big one. So for bone mineral density, once you reach menopausal age, you start losing about 1% of your bone mineral density per year. So that's why it becomes so important. And then that increases your risk of things like osteoporosis, osteopenia in the future, and also risks fractures. If you do fall, you're more likely to fracture a bone. So calcium could be a key one. From an energy perspective, the B vitamins can help. So again, especially if you don't eat meat or you don't eat a lot of meat, it can be really beneficial to take a B vitamin complex or look at your vitamin B12 status. It might be worth taking either a vitamin B12 tablet or going to get an injection from the NHS, depending on what your diet is. And then apart from that, it's kind of very dietary perspective. So I definitely look at iron and make sure you're eating enough iron. And if not, I take that as a supplement. And then things like magnesium and zinc might help if you are struggling with your sleep. So there is a bit of research that showing that if you do take those, they can help to help your body relax, which then is going to improve your sleep quality.
What's the link between, or is there a link between vitamin D3 and serotonin? I thought there was, or is that a bit tenuous with increasing mood?
It's not tenuous. There is definitely a link. So if it can help, yeah. So serotonin is like your happy hormone. And if you get drops in that, then yes, it does impact your mood and it also impacts your ability to sleep. So the link between maximizing vitamin D status and serotonin is there. So again, it's just another reason to take vitamin D.
Perfect. I think one of the things that comes up from a symptom perspective is energy dips. And so what are the nutritional strategies and lifestyle strategies that you'd implement to manage that, please?
So for energy dips, I'd look at things like food timings. So if you know, for example, that you get an energy dip around 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd look at what time you're eating. So a lot of people will have their lunch, I don't know, between 12 and 1, and then they're not necessarily eating again until the evening. So it might be just a case of programming in some sort of snack that will help you in that time. What tends to happen is with those energy dips, you get this food seeking behavior. So you go and find food. And if you're too hungry, that's when you just go and get something that's convenient. And that convenient food might not be very conducive to your goals. So it might be high calorie food, might be high in saturated fat, might be high in sugar. But actually, if you just planned ahead and you plan to have something, so a nutritious snack at that time point, it can really help. And also, I think there's a bit of worry about the calories that you have in snacks. So we worry that it's too energy dense, there's too many calories in it. But if you're having an energy dip and you're only eating, say, 100 calories to try and get yourself out of that dip and it doesn't work, that's when you go and eat a little bit more and you eat a little bit more and you eat a little bit more, or you wait for a meal and then you eat loads because you're starving. So actually giving yourself something substantial at that time period, really beneficial. Especially if you're just starting to go through perimenopause, it takes a bit of navigating. Like I said, everybody's different, so it isn't really one rule fits all. Sometimes at that time, it's not the best thing to do to try and focus on losing weight. Actually, your better focus is just trying to maintain weight and maintain health, in which case you can get away with eating a little bit more at snack time to try and stop these energy dips. And sometimes eating, if you know it's going to come at 4 o'clock, eat at 3:30, because then it'll stop it. You're preempting it's going to happen. And then over time, you can see patterns and you can learn from your own experience about what works. And then if you want to focus on weight loss, you can set things in place to reduce your calorie intake, but at the same time, make sure you don't get these dips. The other thing to focus on when it comes to energy dips is caffeine. So caffeine is a stimulant. It's great in the morning if you need that little bit of boost, especially if you've not had a great night's sleep. If you're having it later on, it is going to impact your sleep later on. So you may well be more sensitive to caffeine as you get a little bit older. So try with an energy dip, try and focus more on food rather on having something that's got a lot of caffeine in it, because you don't want to impact your sleep that night, because the next day you don't want to go through this cycle again. And then finally, actually, from a lifestyle perspective, go and get some fresh air. So in some cases, that energy dip is just simply because you are sat in a dim office. It might have been dark most of the day. So it's more that you just haven't really, you just don't really feel alive. And the symptoms of menopause can then make that feel a lot worse. So that's where this sort of the stress and anxiety can really get quite bad. So just going outside and giving yourself a little bit of break. So maybe go for a walk or even just stand outside and breathe. And like, don't underestimate the power of just breathing in and getting some fresh air and how that can boost your mood. And if you boost your mood, you're less likely to feel that your energy is dipping.
So, yeah, great one. I find that because I have I don't know, but it's probably a lot of his habit, but I feel like I get a bit of an energy dip about 2 o'clock, and that's when I go out for a little walk. Like you said, it's something you used to do when we used to teach, courses, you know, like kettlebell courses, like 2 day courses, and people get fatigued about like 2 o'clock. You're like, right, let's do a bit of exercise. You do like a quick bit of a circuit, which seems counterproductive. You're like, well, why would I burn more energy to give me more energy? But it does, whether it gets the blood flowing or it just wakes you up or it's something that's enjoyable. It definitely works. Now, we're very aware that often people like to overcomplicate things and maybe focus on the minors over the majors, but we did have a question around kind of like what percentages of macronutrients would you recommend people hit if they're trying to, you know, going through perimenopause. So like that's percentage of their calories that they spend on protein to carbs to fats, for anyone who's not aware. Is that a massive concern or should people focus on something else?
I'd focus on protein intake. So I would make sure that you're getting enough protein. So I like inherently the recommendations around protein are actually really low. It's like 0.8 grams per kilogram of your body weight. According to recommendations, it still stays quite low. And that is because they are looking at what you need to survive. So they're looking at making sure that you can maintain nitrogen balance. Actually, what we do know and what research is showing now is you need more than that if you want to build and maintain muscle mass and if you just want a better quality of life. So as you age, I would say pushing that between 1.6 grams per kilogram of body weight, even up to 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight. So that's what I would focus on. In terms of carbohydrates and fats, it's whatever works best for you. So think about your appetite, think about the things that you want to eat, that you enjoy. Have more carbohydrates, allow for more carbohydrates if that's what you prefer. Allow for more fats if that's what you prefer. I would make sure that you're eating enough dietary fat because you do need fats for your hormones, but you don't have to go crazy on it just because you've got a bit older. And also just think about with appetite changes, sometimes it's better to have more volume. So if fats are 9 calories per gram and carbohydrates are 4 calories per gram, you can get a lot more volume for the same number of calories if you focus on carbohydrates. So it's just really finding the balance. Generally, when I work with clients, I'd look at what they're already eating and the foods that they actually enjoy. And then I would work out a split from that. So it's really key on enjoyment, providing that they're not just eating carbohydrates or they're not just eating fats. But then if they train, so if they're exercising, they're exercising quite frequently, I'd usually try and put a little bit more carbs in and a little bit less fat, because those carbs just give you that immediate source of energy so that you can really feel like you can maximize on your training, particularly if you're struggling a little bit with energy dips. But no, I wouldn't get too hung up on it. I would just find what works and stick with it.
And you mentioned in there about having, you know, having some fats. Do you have like a baseline amount or a minimum that people can aim at?
Depends on who they are and how big they are. I would normally say that if it goes below 40, 50 grams, I'd be starting to worry. But again, it's very dependent. So if I work with somebody that's very small, sometimes they just don't need that much. So no, I don't have a minimum, but I'd just say that you need to be eating it. You don't necessarily need to be adding loads of fat to your diet, unless you enjoy it. So I wouldn't add loads of oils, for example, just to get fats in, because then your calories are going to be really high. But if you enjoy a drizzle of olive oil on a salad, then if it means that you eat the salad, it's much better. So no, I just make sure that you're getting some in your diet, and those fats are more concentrated around unsaturated fats than they are saturated.
Brilliant. So do you have top three tips or do's? I know we've talked a lot about a lot of positive stuff. Do you have like a top three hit list that you'd recommend for people to focus on that are going to have the biggest impact on them that they can have control of, like lifestyle, nutrition-wise, that's going to help with their manage their symptoms or manage the perimenopause?
Yeah, can I give you more than three?
Gotcha, yeah.
I'll give you a few. Okay, so firstly, please go see your doctor and talk about HRT. So that is besides the point. So I think everything we've mentioned, but make sure that you're eating enough protein. So I would focus on plus 1.6 grams per kilogram of body weight, potentially go up to around 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight. Make sure you're eating enough fiber. So you're getting minimum your five a day in terms of fruits and vegetables. And then you are focusing on things like whole grain foods, whole grain cereals, the brown stuff. I would reduce your alcohol intake if you do drink alcohol. So definitely have some if you want some, but just really make sure it is just enough to make you happy. Reduce your saturated fat intake. So no more than 20 grams per day of saturated fat, and make sure that you're getting the majority of your fats from unsaturated fats. So the good ones, and they are the oils at room temperature. Make sure you're hydrated. So just generally, hydration makes you feel better. So make sure you're getting at least 2 liters of water per day. Definitely make sure that you are drinking in and around exercise. Then from an exercise perspective, you need to move your body. So just purely from a cardiovascular perspective, you need to be doing at least 8,500 steps per day. Always think something is better than nothing. So if you struggle to get that in, just do more than you do now. I would recommend having a step target, and then make sure that you're engaging in some sort of resistance-based training as well. Cardio if you want to, but resistance-based training as you age is really, really key. Really, really key. Really good for you. Take your supplements and make sure that you're having at least vitamin D. If you are worried about the things that you could be missing out on in your diet, you could go to the doctor and get a blood test and just ask for a panel that includes the nutrition data. From that, you can see if you are missing out on anything and you can top it up. Or you can just go and get a bog standard menopause supplement, which ticks the box for everything. You're not going to overdose, so don't worry. And then finally, just be mindful. So like I said before, be kind to yourself. If you are struggling, it's okay. It's pretty normal. So just take a bit of a break. Focus on breathing. If you need to eat a little bit of chocolate, eat a little bit of chocolate, and speak to your coaches about it, because they can probably help you navigate through it. But just generally give yourself a bit of time to figure out the changes that your body's going through and then how you can adapt your lifestyle to those changes. Everybody is different.
I think it was quite refreshing for someone else to say, eat more protein, eat more vegetables, drink more water. Instead of me and Joe saying it every single episode, I'm less weight as well. It's nice to hear.
Yeah, so listen to Joe and James. They're saying the right thing.
Brilliant. You got anything to add, Joe?
Yeah, the only question off the back of that was, where did the 8,500 steps number come from? That was an interesting, precise one.
Well, yeah, so that's actually the research number. So the 10,000 steps a day is a bit of an arbitrary number. I think it comes from a Japanese person, I'm not 100% sure. So there's no problem with targeting 10,000 steps. The reason why that number came about is it's seen as something that is a challenge for most people, but it's also achievable. So if you already focus on 10,000 steps a day and you get that, keep doing it, crack on, that's great. But for some people, it's really difficult. So especially if you are very busy, you're desk-based, you're going through menopause and you're struggling to sleep, so you don't particularly want to get up at the crack of dawn just to go and do some steps. 8,500 seems to be the number that will keep your heart healthy. So that's more achievable. So basically, what people tend to do from a heart health perspective is they go to the gym, they go running, they go swimming, whatever it is, and they'll do the hour of the day and it ticks a box, but then they sit down for the rest of the day. So if you're sedentary for the rest of the day, it negates the cardiovascular benefits that you got from exercise. If you do the exercise and then you do 8,500 steps, you maintain that benefit. So yeah, 8,500 is the minimum research number for cardiovascular benefit.
Thank you. Very interesting, isn't it? Because normally when it's just me and James, I could just bat around anything that I've read in the last 10 years. But then when you're here, I feel a lot more attuned to the I think it's something, and I'm sure you'll be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but looking at the, is it the blue zones in the areas of the world where people have the longest life expectancy? I think one of them's Sardinia, and I was reading about it the other day, and they were saying that the Mediterranean diet combined with it being really hilly, events, isn't it? If people are forced, quote unquote, into these more to health focus longer. Everything that you said kind of follows.
Yeah, you sorry, you just dipped out there. Yeah, so I don't really like it when we start labeling diets. However, if you had to label diets, if you look at the one that consistently crops up as like the most healthiest, it's always the Mediterranean one. So yeah, I would totally agree. Like when that is just your sort of natural food availability, and that's what you gravitate towards, and it's the home cooked food that goes down, gets passed down through generations. That seems to be the key. And then when you are forced to move your body more, yeah, of course, you're a lot healthier. So sometimes you've just got to look at what you do and what we do in the UK, and you've kind of just got to push past it and try and focus on, the health benefits that other people get in other parts of the world.
Brilliant. Right, I think that wraps it up, Emily. Thank you very much. Very informative, almost depressing at some points when you tell people not to drink or eat chocolate.
No,
Where can people find out more about you or contact you if they need you?
it's So you can contact me through social media, so mainly through Instagram. So my Instagram handle is at Emily Wilkinson PhD. Or you can contact me on Facebook, so it's just Emily Wilkinson. Or if you want to email me, it's sayhello@emilynutritioncoach.co.uk. But yeah, feel free to get in touch if you have any more questions. My inbox is always open.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us, Emily.
Thank you.
No problem. Anytime. Thanks, guys.